This is Vatican Radio. This summer has seen many events commemorating the beginnings of the First World War. In Canada today, more than 100 plaques will be unveiled in communities across the country to mark the 100th anniversary of the nation's War Measures Act. The plaques recall Canada's first national internment operations, which led to hundreds of Eastern European immigrants being classified as enemy aliens and held in internment camps throughout the nation. Father Athanasius McVeigh is a church historian from Canada, specialising in early 20th century ecclesiastical history. He spoke to us about the importance of remembering the internment operations.
In the past few days, the world has been commemorating the outbreak, the very unfortunate outbreak of the First World War. And there's been a lot of, you could almost say, positive commemoration. We want to remember our heroes. We want to remember those who have fought for our country. And yet there were a lot of losers in the war, and not just the countries who in the end ended up surrendering, but within our own countries, within Canada, there were, alongside the brave soldiers that gave their lives, there were our own Canadian citizens and immigrants who had been invited by the government to come from different countries in Europe to settle Canada, to build up especially the West, the prairies, who were deprived of their civil rights, and many were interned in internment camps, basically out of the public sphere. The government was anxious to monitor what they deemed enemy aliens. There was an Enemy Alien Act passed in August 1914, which was to monitor citizens of countries that Great Britain and the British Empire, including Canada, was at war with. And so the Ukrainians, most of the Ukrainian immigrants were from Austria-Hungary. As you know today, modern-day Ukraine, at one time, part of it belonged to Austria, the other part belonged to the Russian Empire. So most of the immigrants in Canada had come from Austria because the Canadian government had sent, Sir Clifford Sifton had sent envoys to Austria to bring in hardy Central European workers to come and build up Canada. But during the war, not so much the government as the general population became very suspicious and fearful. The government needed a way to be able to monitor people to make sure that there was not any activity going on that could be detrimental either to the war effort or the morale at home. But I think it's generally recognized today that they exceeded their mandate, because the internment was really not necessary, and it was not caused by anything that these people, Ukrainians and Germans and Bulgarians and Turks and all sorts of other people who were at war with the British Empire, it was not caused by anything that they had done. Their actions had not contributed to it. There were always the people who were engaged, for example, in spying and that, but this is a very small number. And in fact, the large numbers who were interned were just basically people seeking work. Most were initially interned because they tried to cross the border. It was very common to look for work in the United States. And anyone seeking to leave Canada at that time was arrested and imprisoned if they belonged to a country that with which Great Britain was at war.
Can you tell us, Father, how did the Canadian citizens from belligerent nations, how did they respond, first of all, I guess, to the war, but also to the situation that they found themselves in Canada, where they were being interned, sometimes interned on suspicion of, you know, or worries about their relationship to their home countries?
Well, you have to remember that formal immigration from what is modern-day Ukraine, the formal immigration from Austria-Hungary, Ukrainians from Austria-Hungary, began in 1891. And at the time, it only took 3 years to become a naturalized British subject. So the majority of Ukrainian immigrants in Canada were already British subjects or Canadian citizens. There were a few who had arrived more recently, who were still subjects of the Habsburg Empire. And so the community was divided in a sense. When the war broke out, it was a local war between Austria and Serbia. And all of the predictions were, including the predictions coming from the British government, was that the Britain and the Empire would remain out of this local conflict. So the Ukrainians, in a sense, found themselves caught between two poles. The homeland where their parents and their brothers and sisters and their loved ones lived was under threat from Russia, who was an ally of Serbia. And at the same time, they wanted to remain in Canada and be Canadian citizens. They didn't expect that Canada would ever go to war with Austria. And so they found themselves caught between two poles.
And Father, your specific research deals especially with how the Ukrainian Greek Catholic Church dealt with the situation of internment during the war years. Can you speak a little bit about that and about the people who were involved in ministering to the flocks? Obviously, religion was a very important part of their cultural identity.
The Greek Catholic Church, which was the church or the religion of 80% of the, at least 80% of the Ukrainian immigrants to Canada, was there to minister to the people and help them in their new life. They acted, the church acted as a bridge, in a sense, between the old world and the new world. And in 1912, the Holy Father, St. Pius X, appointed the first bishop, the first Eastern Catholic bishop outside of the old world with full jurisdiction for Canada, Blessed Nikita Budka, who is honored by all Catholics in Canada, who is celebrated on the 27th of June in the Roman Missal across Canada. And Bishop Budka eventually went back to his homeland and became a martyr under the communists, which is another story. But Bishop Budka was looking to prepare these immigrants for life in Canada. And Bishop Budka, one of the first things he did when he arrived in Canada was to write a pastoral guide, which encouraged the people to not to completely assimilate, but to learn English and to become good citizens of Canada, at the same time to retain the richnesses of their heritage, their own language, and to contribute to the new country by sharing their experiences and their traditions with the new country. So the church sought to act as a bridge. When the crisis broke out, the church was also between a rock and a hard place. In fact, it's the title of my tentative title of the article I'm writing, Render Unto Caesar That Which Is Caesar's, and to God That Which Is God's. Because the church, when the war broke out between Austria and Serbia, initially the bishop, fearing an invasion of the homeland by Russia, and having received a notification from the Austrian consulate, initially he informed all of the immigrants who were still subjects of Austria that they should sign up and go and defend the homeland, say, from the Russian invasion. At the time, no one suspected that Britain would enter the war. In fact, the British cabinet was against becoming involved in this, and was to just about into August, shortly before it took a long time for Britain to enter. Very quickly, for the first time in history, the situation developed so quickly that within a few days, everything had changed. There was a domino effect, and many of the great powers became involved in this local, really what was a third Balkan war, because there had been two wars in the Balkans just 2 years previously. So then very quickly, the bishop had to retract that letter and issued another letter to all of the Canadian citizens, or the British subjects, Ukrainians, stating very publicly that the Ukrainian Catholic Church and the community supports the casus belli of Canada and the British Empire, and stated that we will lay down our lives and give our possessions to defend our new homeland, which we have chosen to be our new home. At the same time, when the internment was initiated, the church tried to minister to the to those that had been placed in the internment camps. Very quickly, the bishop and his chancellery, or his administrative office, initiated a program of pastoral ministration when they discovered where the majority of Ukrainians were being interned. Some major camps in eastern Canada, there was Kapuskasing, Casing, Petawawa, Spirit Lake, Quebec, near present-day Abitibi in the interior, in western Canada, Banff, Castle Mountain, and later on Vernon, B.C. Initially, there were a few temporary stations, Winnipeg, Brandon, and the local clergy or whoever was closest to those camps then made trips to minister to these people. the bishop and his clergy quickly got in touch with government officials who, despite any controversy between the perception of the perhaps the Ukrainian community as being in some way disloyal because some were Austrian citizens, and yet the bishop and his chancellery maintained very good relations throughout the war with federal authorities, especially with the Prime Minister, Sir Robert Borden, and the Justice Minister, Charles Doherty, and others. They contacted the federal authorities and obtained special permission, obtained government recognition of an appointed chaplain for the camps, who unfortunately was only able to minister for a few months before he was struck down with illness. The bishop himself was ill at the time and spent a few months in convalescent leave, but during that time his chancellor set up a network of visitations and made sure that, as much as possible, the internees were receiving ministration. In one camp, Spirit Lake, the internees built a small Ukrainian Catholic church, and as well a Roman Catholic church was built, because in the province of Quebec, I suppose, perhaps the camp authorities were a little bit more friendly towards Catholicism. In other camps, we don't know whether there was any ministration. For example, in Banff Castle Mountain, we're not sure whether a Catholic priest of the Roman Rite or of the Byzantine Rite was able to visit at all. There's no record in the camp diary of such a visitation, although the official government chaplains, mostly Protestants, in fact all Protestants, would make a visit on a Sunday. Aside from pastoral and sacramental care, the church also initiated a program, an information program, you could call it, making some information about the camps available to the public, especially the Ukrainian-Canadian public, through the church's newspaper. Various articles were published, and the public was encouraged to remember the internees, to write letters to them, and to send them gifts to help them in their unfortunate situation and in their loneliness, moral support, basically. As well, the church kept in contact with government officials and attempted to mitigate, to improve the lot of the internees, and ultimately to have them released. An important aid initiative which took place at the end of 1915 and the beginning of 1916 was a Christmas collection, Christmas hamper collection from the Ukrainians across Canada, which allowed Christmas celebrations. In fact, these hampers were sent to all the camps, and the commanders of the camps did write back and thank the church for having organized this Christmas celebration. In one camp, the bishop himself and the local pastor was able to celebrate. Remember that at the time, all the Ukrainians celebrated Christmas on the 7th of January, according to the Julian calendar. So these celebrations took place, and the authorities themselves were grateful that the church had had improved the morale of the interned themselves. As I say, eventually the church was represented on various committees which lobbied for the release of the interned altogether. It was unfortunate that the church itself was in a very, as in other circumstances, perhaps one could even make a comparison to the Holy See during the Second World War, a very unenvious position, a very limited position, operating from a very weak standpoint diplomatically and politically. And the same goes for the Ukrainian Catholic Church in Canada. Rather than choosing public protest, the church chose to engage in very discreet action, in action which didn't question the loyalty to the government and these unfortunate decisions, which now the government itself recognizes were mistaken. But in order to achieve the best possible results, spiritual and material, for the interned themselves, the church chose to engage in a very quiet and discreet action, but action nonetheless. The church was very active to do what they could to help the interned. It's very easy to criticize in hindsight. But a colleague of mine recently gave an interview on Canadian television where he said, it's not about us. It's not about me apologizing for what my grandfather did to your grandfather. These commemorations should be about remembering. History is the memory of mankind. And I think we owe it to history to remember these events and to make some symbolic redress, but to move forward and learn from our mistakes and to make a better world and to promote our Catholic values.